Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM. Talkspace.com/boom. B-O-O-M.
You're Locked On Warriors, your daily Golden State Warriors podcast. I am Danny Lurie, your host, and so happy to bring you your team every day. Certainly wanted to do a podcast on the big Warriors-Thunder game, and nobody better to do it with than Fred Katz, who hosts Locked On Thunder and is a writer for the Norman Transcript. And we talked about the game and a large variety of other things as well. And we go through the game, the atmosphere. I wanted to talk to him also because he was there. So we talked about the atmosphere of it, the mechanics of the game, what he thinks of the Warriors' backup big men. And since it's a crossover podcast, there is a lot of Thunder conversation as well. But I find that team absolutely fascinating. So I hope you do as well. This episode is brought to you by SeatGeek. SeatGeek is a great way to buy and sell tickets. And if you download their free app and then use the promo code LOWARRIORS for Locked On Warriors, you get a $20 rebate on your first purchase. So the conversation runs about 45 minutes. I hope you enjoy it. Welcome on. We are doing a combined episode of Locked On Warriors and Locked On Thunder. Plenty to talk about after Saturday night's significant game between the Oklahoma City Thunder and the Golden State Warriors, their third game of the year, but Kevin Durant's return game in Oklahoma City. And Fred Katz and I are going to talk about it. And I think the place to start with this is something that you can attest to and I cannot, which is the atmosphere in the building.
The atmosphere was, I mean, it was crazy. It was definitely a unique situation, and it came off that way. Like, I've never been to a mid-February blowout that has been quite like that, and my guess is I may never be at one quite like that again.
Right. Like, I had that trouble when I was writing about the game of just, it was more about the spectacle than anything else, but the spectacle absolutely lived up to it. And it wasn't only the crowd. It was that the players really acted like they cared about what happened and cared about playing. And if you want to focus on, you know, the effort exerted, that's fine. Or the extracurriculars like Westbrook and Durant jawing, or Durant and Robertson going head to head, those sorts of things were there in spades.
So did you listen to Durant on the Bill Simmons podcast?
I have not yet. It's something on my list to listen to.
It's so good. It's so good. That's like Simmons's wheelhouse. That kind of stuff, like, that's what Simmons is best at right now, I think. Like, those kinds of interviews. And Durant, like, I've noticed, like, it seems like he grew up reading Bill Simmons, because at one point in the podcast he says, "I effing love you." Like, he was like a Simmons fanboy during. He was so open and honest, and it was just, I thought Simmons did such a good job with it. Anyway, I thought it was interesting. Like, Durant at one point was talking with him about how, you know, a lot of athletes say they don't have any emotions about games like this. And he was going out of his way to say, I am emotional about this game, and it's an emotional game. And it was recorded a couple days before he actually played the game. And he was saying, I'll be emotional for the game. It's the only way to do it, and to pretend that you're tough because you don't have those emotions isn't there. And, you know, the Thunder, not every player on the Thunder, but on the record at least, you know, they all talk about, we pushed that away 8 months ago. And I don't know if that's necessarily, Durant called it a tough thing. I don't know if it's necessarily a toughness thing. Maybe for some players it is, some players it isn't. I think in some ways it's just a coping mechanism. I think in some ways it's a way to just not have to deal with media questions too. You know, if they say that enough, if they're boring enough, people aren't going to ask it as much. But like, it's a thing. There are emotions there, which is fine. There's nothing wrong with there being emotions there. But there are, you know there are emotions there. Of course there are. It would be weird if there weren't emotions there. And it all came out in that game. Like, Andre Robertson is the coolest, calmest, most laid-back person ever. And he was literally forehead-to-forehead with Kevin Durant.
It was wild, because it wasn't exactly the way that I expected some of those elements, the Robertson interaction definitely, the most notable of those, to go. And an element of the Warriors that is underreported might be strong, but is underappreciated, is that they're very emotionally honest guys, to a man. I mean, that's just the way that this team works. and it's unusual. Like, I've as somebody who's covered the NBA for years, like, it's a little bit strange how candid they are on a lot of these sorts of things. And I personally find it more engaging. I find it more accessible. I understand why players aren't that way most of the time, but I feel like it adds color to the dynamics of the league, and it adds a level of honesty that is nice to have.
I do think to some degree, too, that the chippiness in the game, I don't know if it was all like, you know, it would be cool to say it was all because it was just Kevin Durant versus the Thunder, because that's like the fun storyline. I don't know if it was all that. I think some of it from the Thunder's perspective was also a reaction to the last time they played when Zaza had that big flagrant foul on Russell Westbrook and he got called for the flagrant and stood over him and no one came over. And there was a narrative that followed after that, which was, you know, why did nobody come over and get in Zaza's face? And I don't think that was a false narrative. Like Anthony Morrow openly talked about how he spoke to the team after and said, like, they've got to stick up for their guys better. And I think they went into that game probably more conscious of, like, this could get chippy, this could get physical. And I think when you go into a game with that mentality, as opposed to going into a game with just kind of your normal everyday mentality, there's a much greater chance for those sorts of situations to happen than if you're just going in like it's a normal game against the Bucks in the middle of February.
That's a great point. And the emotions also just come in not only from the building, but from the buildup that you just have to have because it's a home game. Everything is different. You know, the media crush is different. The way that you're dealing with stuff pregame is different. And so that seeps in, plus the intensity of the game that they wanted to have a good show. It's a national television game. It's the highest profile contest the Thunder will play from now until the playoffs.
Yeah, so I'll tell you what, like
you're gonna give it your all. Then
they talk about, like, you know, they're not talking about it, they're not thinking about it, but like there are players who are like wanting to know, like, did Kevin say hi to the security guards when he walked in? They wanted to know that. Not every single one of them, but like there are people in that locker room who are, like, wanted to know things, and like that. It would be so weird if they didn't want to know that. That's the way it should be. If I worked with a dude for such a long time and I was friends with him, and it's, you know, people talk about how it's a working, they're just work friends or a working relationship. I think that was the word that Durant used. But like work friends when you're on an NBA team is so different. There are 12, 15 people that you're hanging out with all the time. You're traveling with them. You're in the plane with them. You're with them hours upon hours every single day, 7 days a week. These are not 9-to-5 work friends where you work in cubicles on different parts of the office. Maybe you cross paths at the water cooler once a week. It's a totally different environment. And for someone just not to care about that, that would be weird. Caring is not weird. Caring doesn't make you not tough. It doesn't make you insufficient as a human being or as a competitor. It doesn't make you uncompetitive. You know, people, I at the very least, I won't speak for others, but I appreciate that kind of stuff. I wish guys would talk about it more openly because I think it would honestly make them look better.
It resonates with people because it connects more with their lives. And you talked about the travel component of it, and I think that's important. But also in basketball, your success is dependent on your relationships and the playing with other people. It's not an individual sport. So it's not even just the travel component of it. It's that if you are on the court, you're also dependent on four other people, and those four people change around, presumably among the other 14 guys on your roster. So you've interacted with them in a very different way. You know, it's more like even on a, like a team in a work concept, but that is your entire success is based on that as well.
Can I ask you a question?
Sure.
Did you think it was a little uncomfortable, the environment on Saturday?
No. Not uncomfortable, though I could imagine that there would be things that were said and yelled out by, particularly by fans, but maybe by players on each team that were uncomfortable. Like there was that weird interaction with I think it was Draymond and Andre Iguodala with his security guard, like those sorts of things. Yes. But other than that, not too much.
Yeah. I kind of thought the cupcake stuff was weird. I mean, you knew it was coming. I knew it was coming. I talked about it in the podcast. I wrote about it in like three articles leading up to it. You knew cupcake chants were coming. You knew people were going to make signs or do what else it was because, you know, you tweet anything about Kevin Durant and my mentions just blow up with cupcake jokes. But like that kind of stuff, it's not insulting. I don't think it's insulting. It's just like a little, you know, Bomani Jones made a point on Twitter, which I thought was a really interesting one. And I have a column out on us from Sunday, which kind of wraps together like Bomani's tweet, along with like kind of some of the stuff that Durant said on Simmons's podcast, along with like what right do fans have to disagree with or agree with a free agent's decision on where he wants to go, and is that even the right word? Is like agree even the right word there? But Bomani made a point, which you know, you're calling Kevin Durant soft, but you know, a guy left a town 8 months ago, and you're therapeutically booing for 3 hours, and you're calling Kevin Durant the soft one. And I think that's a little bit far, but I do think it's at the very least like an interesting, it's an interesting opposition to take as like the devil's advocate for why you should boo Kevin Durant. Because I do think these sorts of philosophical debates go a lot deeper than, you know, so-and-so left the team, let's boo.
They do. And I've described it before. I actually went back and listened to the most candid thing I ever really said on this whole story was actually back in October. And my point on it was that it goes to the idea of identity. And I think about this in terms of college, because for me, that's the only team that I have that I think about that way, that it feels more personal because there's more that you put some of yourself into the team that you care about. And when somebody says no to that, it is a more personal rejection than just a business decision. And I understand that part of it. The only element of the fan reaction that bothered me, and I fully expected this to be coming, I'd actually been asked about it in radio spots, is I think that the first interaction they did, which was probably during player introductions, should have been positive as like a one-off, like, we buy ourselves plausible deniability. If you want to do it from the callous perspective, you can do it from the callous perspective. If you want to do it from the genuine appreciation perspective, it's the better way of thinking about it. Just as a thank you for 9 years of providing contribution, 8 years in Oklahoma City, 9 years with a franchise. And then you just boo relentlessly. I think that would have bought them some currency. I understand that the human psyche is very different and it's very personal, and I never try to dissuade people from being genuine, but I think that would have made a difference.
Yeah, maybe. I think that's kind of hard to organize. Like, I don't think 20,000 people are going to... That's not intuitive to 20,000 people, you know?
It depends. Like, so that used to be kind of the standard thing, you know, back in the day when players would leave and come back. But why I was fully confident it wasn't going to happen was it didn't happen with LeBron. And that is the most direct analog to what happened. And LeBron is more complicated because he's from Northeast Ohio and continues to rep Northeast Ohio, especially now. But it's the same general idea. And I understand the hurt. And again, that's why I'm not begrudging them for it. But that would have been, I think that would have been a nice touch. But as you said, it's impossible to coordinate. That's like, as a fan, I don't know exactly. It would have to probably be somebody on like the Giants for me. If somebody left who had a huge contribution, that's probably what I would have done, but it's hard to know.
Yeah, no, look, I'm not necessarily begrudging the boos. I genuinely understand it, especially in a state. Like, I think it's one of the reasons it's so big is because, like, you know, one of the things where it's not necessarily in common, and LeBron leaving is a bigger deal just because it's LeBron and he was the local kid and he was the savior for that organization and all of that. And there's the entire history in Cleveland when Oklahoma City doesn't have a history. It's only been a franchise for 9 years now. But Kevin Durant leaving in the one of the ways which kind of elevates it, it's the only major league team in the entire state. And the state kind of rallies behind the Thunder in a lot of ways. And I understand, I absolutely understand the booing from that perspective. And I definitely don't think it's inappropriate, and I definitely don't think it's unwarranted, but I do think there are ways that we can look at it where, like, it doesn't have to be all the way positive or all the way negative. We can just look at it in a more nuanced sense and think, like, there were parts of this where I thought, like, you know, like, this is kind of a weird social thing. Like, there's nothing about being a fan of a sports team, any sport, that is rational. And, like, I'm not a fan of NBA, any NBA team. But, like, I'll use baseball because I'm a huge Yankees fan. And there is nothing rational about me being a huge Yankees fan. I became a huge Yankees fan in the 1990s when I was growing up because I loved Derek Jeter, and I loved Bernie Williams, and I loved Jorge Posada, and I loved Mariano Rivera, and all those guys. And none of those guys are on the Yankees now. So aside from the fact that they don't have the same owner, they don't even have the same GM as they did in 1996. Like, there is no constant other than the uniform. And there's nothing rational behind still rooting for the same team. It would be rational for me to pick new players who I liked and go there. But we all do it. Every single one of us, every single sports fan, we all do it. And there's nothing rational behind it. And I think the booing, there's rational behavior inside this reality, which we've all created and we've all decided to it's societally acceptable. But the reality that we've created is based on these irrational concepts. And it's just this weird part of society, which has always existed. It's always been like this. And it's just kind of this excusable way to be irrational. And I'm not exempt from it. I do it in baseball and I do it in football. And it's just, I think we should all acknowledge that it's this weird thing that we all accept is totally normal.
Between this conversation and discussing being open with our emotions, you can definitely tell this is more of like a millennial conversation than a lot of other things, because I'm sure there's a selection of people that think about these things very differently, and they are fully entitled to. And that actually ties in with something that was another storyline that I actually found really interesting, thinking about it from an economics perspective, which is the whole mahogany part of this. And so the reporting was that basically that Durant or his team or somebody wanted to rent out the steakhouse, and they said no. And many went for the emotional angle of it, and that's certainly possible. I have not spoken with them. I do not know why they allegedly turned it down, if that is in fact what happened. But going into the idea of a rational fandom is actually the best explanation for this, because if they had said yes and shut it down, especially considering Russell ended up going there after the game, then they become a lightning rod. They become a villain, even if they made the right business decision. And in a city where that can actually resonate and that can people remember that for a long time, it matters. They made the right economic decision too, whether or not they felt that way morally.
They got so much they got so much publicity. Would you have heard of Mahogany Steakhouse?
I actually had, but that's because of the job that we do. So
right.
You know,
true.
If other than in that sort of circumstance, no.
I mean, I've heard of it because I live in Oklahoma City, and it's one of the best restaurants in Oklahoma City. And it's right next to the arena. But I bet you there are a lot of people out there who never would have heard of it, or maybe just hadn't thought. Maybe there are a lot of people out there who are like, oh yeah, Mahogany, I haven't been there in a while. You know, it's just so much free advertising. So yeah, I mean, that is.
Well, and not only that, but you're reducing the negative, because there are people who would have held it against them if they had done the reverse.
Oh yeah, no question. Look at what happened to his restaurant. Look what happened to KD's. He doesn't even have ownership in that anymore. But if it had the name KD's, they had to shut down for a month. They had to rebrand their Legacy Grill now. They've got a bunch of, it's Oklahoma athletes on the wall, whether it's Blake Griffin or whomever else. And, there's no Kevin Durant in there anymore. And it used to be KD's. And it used to be Kevin Durant stuff all over the walls. I mean, look, that makes sense. That I have, you know. That there's nothing weird about that. That makes perfect sense. Of course, that's both a business decision and a social decision. I mean, that why would there be a place named KD's in Oklahoma City at that point, especially if he's no longer, you know, an owner of the place? It just makes every sense. But it's just, you know, it's just something else. It all leaks into business, doesn't it?
It always does. Cash rules everything around me.
So what else we got from this game? We talking about the actual, because the actual basketball wasn't that.
Well, so I thought it was interesting how there was this disparity between the first half and the second half. So in the first half, it fit a lot of the conventions that we expected. So the Thunder kept it close early, used a lot of that adrenaline, and then the second Russell Westbrook went off the floor, the Warriors went on a massive run, and that provided the difference in the first half.
Right. I mean, the Thunder have had some moments lately where the bench has been okay, where they've been all right with Westbrook off the floor. But that was very much not the case against Golden State, and it's mostly not been the case ever since Enes Kanter got hurt. You know, from a Thunder perspective, and I know the Warriors fans, this is a very menial thing, but from a Thunder perspective, like, Cameron Payne got benched in this game. They put in Samaje Christen in the second half, and Cameron Payne he struggled in his 17-18 games since coming back from his foot injury. And Billy Donovan putting in Samaje Christen after the game, there was so much hectic. Like, it was so hectic after the game that, like, there was just no opportunity for me, you know, between Kevin Durant and the Warriors guys wearing cupcake shirts after the game and Russell Westbrook talking and Robertson talking and all that stuff. There was no time for me to stay late and miss out on somebody and ask Billy Donovan, like, hey, how about you playing Samaje Christie in the second half? And they didn't practice on Sunday. But, man, that was interesting to me because that was an acknowledgement from Billy, like, this bench stuff is not working right now.
Well, Fred was lucky enough to experience this game live. I've been lucky enough to experience a lot of other amazing games live, and I can attest to the value and of that experience. It's just really incredible. And the best way to do that, if you're not lucky enough to get a credential or a friend who can give you a ticket for free, is to use SeatGeek, which is my personal way of buying and selling tickets. And there are a couple different reasons why that's true. One of the big ones is that it is an aggregator, so it takes a lot of different places that you can buy tickets and puts them in one place. And so you don't have to worry about missing out on a deal or a set of tickets because they're not on the site that you're looking at. They'll be on SeatGeek. And also because they have a great service called DealScore. And I've talked about this at various moments in the past, but I used to buy and sell tickets. It was my job. And part of my job was knowing arenas really, really well and knowing where the good sight lines, where the good seats were, especially for my own personal use, you know, because that's the best value is if you can find an underappreciated spot and get a good value on those. And SeatGeek uses DealScore. And what I found when I started using the app was that they did a really crazy good job of that. And if they can do that with somebody who knows these markets really well, if their algorithms are that well tuned, then they'll do a great job for you as well. So you can check out DealScore. They're a great aggregator. And also, you can get it's an awesome deal right now. You can download the free SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab, enter the promo code LO Warriors for Locked On Warriors, and you get $20 rebate on your first purchase. So you get to try out the app that I use personally and highly recommend. And you also get $20 free whenever you buy your first purchase and you tell them that you came from us. So hopefully they will keep advertising with us. So again, SeatGeek, download the app, promo code LO Warriors. And now more with Fred. It was also interesting that the Warriors made a decision to play Ian Clark instead of Patrick McCaw. I think some of that was just due to the stage, that this was, you know, a high intensity game, a rival crowd. But at the same point, I said they were probably trying to protect McCaw a little bit in that way, just like Damian Jones, Briante Weber didn't play, though Weber's older, of course.
Right. I think Billy Donovan did the same thing when he put Morrow in first over Alex Abrines.
Right. And isn't Abrines still coming back from injury?
He's healthy now. He's fine. I mean, at least that's what he says. He says he's fine. He was just having back spasms for a few games, but he says he's okay.
But so my counter to that for the Warriors is that if they want, even if he's a small part of their postseason rotation, this is probably the lowest stakes equivalent of this that McCaw's going to get. So like once the outcome was relatively comfortable, you know, of course the Thunder came back, they got it down to, I think 12 was the closest it ever got. But I would have given McCaw a little bit just to see it in that circumstance, to see how those guys respond once the stakes get that way. But that also is not the way coaches think.
Right. Coaches are a lot more paranoid about leads than fans are.
Coaches, oh my God, yes.
It is a million times. Like, how many more times do you hear fans say, and media too, how many more times do you hear fans and media say, and this is true for every single coach. I can't think of a coach that this is not true for. How many more times do you hear fans or media say, why is he leaving his guys out there with that lead? And compare it to how many times you hear them say, why is he removing his guys so early from the game to give them rest?
Yeah,
it's true for every single coach.
It's true, and for me personally, like I've made that a big thing this year that I think Kerr plays his starters too much in the fourth quarter, and it hasn't reared its head yet. Knock on wood, because nobody ever wants anybody to get hurt. But it's completely true that coaches are incredibly risk averse, even when in Kerr's case he's not that way with everything else. You know, like they're being super judicious about everything. They're basically keeping Zaza Pachulia out. Whether he's healthy or not, they basically have said, we're going to be super patient with this because we have no reason not to. But then Draymond Green, Kevin Durant are in the game with like 4 minutes to go when they're up by 20. So, you know, again, rationality doesn't always tie in with coaches too. They have a lot of it, but it's a little bit different, especially in basketball where you're connected with it as opposed to managers in baseball that can be a little bit more separated.
I think it's also like one of those things where, okay, so like what's a lesson that you will learn? You are a lawyer. What is a lesson that you will 100% learn if you go to law school? That often the answer to something is the counterintuitive one. And I think this is kind of one of those scenarios too, where first off, in terms of resting guys, if they're hurt or whatever it is, like a lot of those times, resting guys is not necessarily playing them 28 versus 36 minutes. It's just whether you suit up or not. So those 8 minutes don't necessarily make nearly as big of a difference as playing 0 minutes versus 8 minutes, you know? Just suiting up, mentally exhausting yourself, having to go through the process of even going for a game, even if you never even get in, is just tiring. And that's not really a day off. And I think that's something that factors into that kind of stuff too, in terms of like the Zaza situation, or, you know, you see it with a bunch of other teams too, with teams being cautious, bringing guys back or getting guys extra rest or whatever it is. And I think there's maybe a psychological aspect too. Like something along the lines of, I'd rather play Stephen Curry 35 minutes instead of 34 minutes, or 35 minutes instead of 31 minutes. And because losing this game would just be too mentally detrimental to the team, and the risk is just not worth the reward, even if the risk is incredibly minimal. And I think every single coach tends to operate that way. And I think when every coach tends to operate that way, we might have to process, because one thing that coaches have that none of us have, even if the numbers support some of this stuff, is that like when they're in the locker room, there are just some things that they just understand about a team we can't. And I think this might be one of those. I used to be firmly on the side of like, why don't coaches pull guys earlier? And I've kind of turned around. Like I there's got to be a reason why none of them, absolutely none of them, the best ever, none of them do it.
There are a couple of reasons. One is also the idea of that it's worse. It's considered, I disagree with this, but it's considered worse to be wrong the way they are instead of the other way. Like, and some of that gets into something I've never really asked players this. It'd be interesting too, of when you get pulled and it looks like you're not going to come back in the game, of what it's like to then have to come back in the game. Because I think that's a big reason why some coaches don't do it, is that if they put in their backups and then they, you know, the starters, whether it's that they're doing stuff with the training staff or whatever, that they feel like they're done and then they have to come back in, that is a problem. And if that is a physical issue, I completely understand. You know, I legitimately don't know. I have not been that athlete. I have not thought of ever asking that question at the right time. So that could be a part of it as well. And then the other thing is that coaches, unless there's an injury late, and in that circumstance, yeah, they can really get blamed. It doesn't happen that much if you happen to lose a lead or whatever like that. Like when the Warriors did that a couple of times by keeping their starters in, but they were basically playing not to get hurt. That's a very different conversation than when a team puts in their backups and their backups get smoked and then they lose the game.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense too. I wonder if it's ever going to change.
I want to talk. I don't think so. At least not in the near term, especially considering so many coaches are former players. So like, I mean, you're just going to see a lot of those elements perpetuate because it's the way that they experienced, especially the ones who were in the starter realm, because that's the way they were handled. And if they like that, then by all means.
Right. Makes sense.
But so I wanted to talk to you about Russ. So he had it's unfair to call it a representative game because Russ is usually a lot better than this. But in terms of everything running through him and some of the shots not falling and some of the passes ending up in enemy hands, it did fit that general scope, even if it was on the more negative side than usual.
Yeah, I actually thought he shot the ball well. He shot the ball really well, which masked a lot of what he did. You know, he shot well from mid range. I forget what he shot from three. I don't have it right in front of me, but I think he shot a decent
3 of 10.
Oh, so he didn't shoot great from three, but it's not like he was, you know, he's had worse nights than that.
Yeah, and he got to the line 18 times. Right. I mean, that's huge.
He was super. I mean, look, he had 47 points on what, 26 shots?
26 like field goal attempts, yeah.
Right. I mean, that's he had a really overall efficient night in terms of just scoring well and shooting the ball well. But yeah, to go with those 11 turnovers, he had a lot of those moments, which you see from him every once in a while, where his legs are moving faster than his mind. When he, you know, he drives by somebody, whether it's in a pick and roll or an isolation situation, and he gets into that spot. Like, you know, it usually happens like 11 feet from the basket where he goes to try to take off, and then he thinks, oh, gonna pass instead. And he looks to his right and throws to his right, but there's a defender to his left or whatever it is. There's a defender right there. It happened a couple times. Ian Clark picked off a pass. I think Iguodala picked off a pass. That's how a bunch of those turnovers came. And those are the types of turnovers that kill you against Golden State. Not just because they're live ball turnovers, but they're live ball turnovers with your momentum going the opposite direction of where they're going to be going in transition. And it gives the whoever intercepts the pass a running start going the opposite way. And those are the kinds that just absolutely kill you. You might as well just give them a free lane to the basket.
Right. And my general line with the Warriors is that the best way to beat them is with their help. And that does exactly the opposite. You know, like, you want to win the turnover margin. You want to get to the line more. And while Westbrook got to the line 18 times, the free throw margin, attempt margin, was 36 to 35 for the Thunder. So it's hard to win that way. And there's a certain part of me that feels like, you know, that it's not the biggest deal for the Thunder to have trouble with the Warriors, considering they're at two very different places right now. But I did enjoy the intensity that they came out with. In that first quarter, I thought they played very well.
Yeah, I mean, look, they play hard. That's never an issue. I honestly, look, you watch some guys play around the league and you can point out, and I know you can do the same thing. You point out and you're like, that guy just doesn't go hard every single play. And, you know, obviously there are guys who will take off every once in a while because they're human beings. But for the most part, it's not really ever an effort issue on this team. Like, they tend to go hard. And, like, they were – if you can't go hard in that game last night, that environment, something's up. Like, it's the human element again, right? Like, you're going to go hard in that environment. You just have to. Like, I was sitting there writing my gamer. I was like, even I'm just like, my gamer better be good tonight. Like, my gamer has to – this is too big. This has to be good tonight. And I was, like, locked in writing my gamer, you know? Like, it has that effect. It's the human element of figuring that stuff out.
And that ties in with the idea for me of why I thought the stage with the national TV and everything else played a factor in everybody amping it up so much, because players care about that. That's when they know they're – even their friends and family that don't watch every game, but that maybe they don't subscribe to League Pass or whatever, that live in other places wherever they grew up, they're going to watch those games. And so you want to show out, you want to do your best. And that's the way we are. You know, you're getting your close up. You think this is the opportunity to get that. When I'm writing a piece that I know is going to get a lot more attention, I put that more time in it. I try to make sure every comma is in place and do everything else, because you know, it's going to get scrutinized to a different degree.
Yep. Absolutely. It's the same thing, except I think more people watch that game than anybody who reads either of our pieces.
Yeah, but it's all on scale. That's the way it is for anybody in their life. You know, you have certain moments that you know are going to have more attention, that are going to have bigger microscope, and you try to make sure you're on point.
Absolutely.
The other thing that I wanted to mention, just because you see them less, what did you think of the Warriors' big men in this game? Because it's such a frequent point of conversation on my show and everything else. So McGee, Looney, and McAdoo got those minutes due to Zaza and David West being out.
Yeah, so McGee, people are really excited about JaVale McGee. Is it wrong that I'm not?
It is totally fair that you are not.
I mean, okay, so he's obviously an incredible athlete. There's no question. That's never been a question. He's an unbelievable athlete, and he has some fantastic finishes around the rim. And in some ways, like, remember when – did we talk about this? I talked about this with someone on a podcast recently. Did we talk about this with him and DeAndre Jordan last time we podcasted?
Maybe. I don't remember.
So in whatever summer it was, 2012 or 11 or whatever the heck it was, like, remember he and DeAndre Jordan signed those – not quite identical, but like very, very similar deals, like 4 for 42 and 4 for 44 or whatever.
Well, if that was true, that was after the lockout. So yeah.
Yeah. So they signed.
That was 2011.
Right. So they signed those extensions off. Those were their rookie scale extensions. And they signed those like within, you know, a very short time of each other. And the question was like, who would you rather have? Because they were both the two young, really athletic centers, right? And it was, you know, which one would you rather have, JaVale McGee or DeAndre Jordan? That was a real question. DeAndre Jordan, you know, refined his game and became a real defensive player and, you know, obviously a threat in the pick and roll and great screener and all that stuff. And JaVale went the other way. And I still think there are so many things that JaVale has that go the other way. Like, he's not a very good screener. People talk about him as a pick and roll threat because of the threat of the lob, but I don't think he's that good of a screener. He leaves his screens really early sometimes. He doesn't always square guys up. He doesn't always stay firm and hold through a guy when he gets hit. And I think that can be, I mean, it's not like a huge problem, but if you have a guy like that, like, you want him setting hard screens. He's not, you know, as good as you'd want a guy on that team at setting, you know, pin downs for Clay and that kind of stuff. And defensively, he's still out of place really often, which is really, really a thing. Like, a lot of those plays where Westbrook got to the rim, Westbrook ended up getting fouled and that kind of stuff. It was JaVale late coming over and help. And, you know, I don't know at this point in his career if that's something that's ever really going to change to a point where he's going to be a plus defender.
It's not like, I mean, other than maybe some the time on the Wizards where that team was just a madhouse, that he has had some really terrible coaching. I mean, he played under George Karl for the Nuggets. He's bounced around a little bit. And there are a lot of basic elements of it that he doesn't really have together. Like, if he could be a better screener, as you said, and you're right, he sometimes doesn't have that attention. And it's in many ways more frustrating when a guy is a capable offensive player to not set good screens because they would be helping themselves.
Yes, and, I that's a great point.
And so if he could do, let's say, one every 2 months, like they pick, whether it's the coaching staff or Draymond, pick one fundamental element of basketball and just say, if you can become passable in this, by the end of the year, you will be able to make like $5 to $10 million a year. Like, that's really all it'll take for him, is to get through a couple of those basic things. But as you said, like, his pick and roll defense in this game was horrendous. And he's a novelty, but the Warriors are very good with him on the floor offensively because they're comfortable dealing with a limited pick and roll, crashing, offensive rebounding center, because it's similar offensively to what Festus Ezeli did, and JaVale McGee has a way better vertical and way better hands.
Right. No, I mean, look, I will not doubt his athletic ability, his finishing ability around the rim. He's got, like, the most underrated dunk of the last 10 years in the dunk contest, which was that two baskets at the same time, which was...
I was there, and it was... I covered that dunk contest. It's the only one before the one upcoming that I've ever covered, and it was criminal that he lost.
It was that's one of the best dunk contest dunks of all time, in my opinion.
And also, I will mention that as Blake Griffin is probably the best in-game dunker I've seen in person, and that car dunk was not good in person. He's a wonderful dunker, but that was intensely... It didn't pop in the arena at all.
Well, you know why Blake... It was predetermined that Blake won the dunk contest. They had to get the Kia in the finals.
But he didn't have to win. He just had to make the finals.
No, I know. I'm just joking. I don't want to get a call.
If he had jumped over the roof... If he had jumped over the roof, he wins. No problem.
No, Barron, I know. I'm with you. Blake is like a top 3 or 4 favorite in-game dunker of all time for me. You see his dunk yesterday? Oh, my goodness.
I haven't seen it yet, actually. He dunked on Miles Plumlee so bad his brother got traded.
Can we talk about the last two trades in the NBA have been Plumlee's?
Yeah.
Next up, Marshall Plumlee, and then next up, Joffrey LaVergne.
No, it has to be one of the other Zellies before it goes to...
No, have you noticed that Joffrey LaVergne looks exactly like Miles Plumlee?
Well, he has the same beard. They have different facial structures.
Oh, I think they look... Do you know Zach Harper's nickname for him?
No.
Kilometers Plumlee.
I hope he puts the axe... I think it's an axon glaff on it, but I hope he puts that on as well. But yeah, down with that.
I love that nickname. I think it's such... I actually should tell Joffrey about that nickname and get his opinion on it. Get the official opinion. Also, before you go, Danny, I do need to say something to the podcasters, because I made a promise on my Friday podcast to my listeners, and I need to tell them this. So, I told them that I would ask Kyle Singler about a hairstyle that he wore in practice on Thursday, which was he wore like the man bun, but it was his hair is kind of short, and it was, as I described it to Kyle, I thought it was ridiculous looking. I promised the listeners, and I got requests over the weekend reminding me to ask him. And I asked Kyle, and Kyle said the reason he wore it like that in practice was because he didn't have like whatever product he uses to put in his hair. He wanted to make sure it didn't distract him in practice, so he had to tie it up at the back. And that was the reasoning. And I know your Warriors listeners could not care less about this one, but you'd be surprised how much Thunder fans care about Kyle Singler's hair.
I was afraid you were going to ask me about mine, but I have no problem with that whatsoever.
No, you're going to go with like the Aaron Baines man bun.
I legitimately do not, and people can do whatever the heck they want with it. I just, that's not my thing at all. Like that whole component of it, if you're doing it for manageability reasons, but yeah, I mean, Aaron Baines and Beno Udre being on the same rotation is just incredible.
Oh yeah. Especially, does Udre still have, I haven't watched that man. I forget. Does he got rid of the blonde bun, right?
I haven't seen him in a little bit because he got pushed out of the rotation once Reggie got back.
Right.
But I don't think it was more that Eternal Glory at the beginning of the year when he was playing a lot and the two of them together, and it still resonates.
Right. Well, he got at the beginning of the year the it was not just a bun, it was like bleached, the bun.
Yeah, it was the blonde streaks or whatever it was. It was magnificent.
Incredible. I think this means the conversation's deteriorated.
Or it's elevated, either way. I'm not entirely sure. Oh, do you have an opinion on James Michael McAdoo's headband? Because it is frustrating to me because I can get him confused all the time now.
I have an opinion on Bryante Weber being arguably the most accessorized player in the NBA.
It's fantastic.
It's
a part of the reason he should still be on the team after this 10-day contract.
He wears everything.
Everything.
Like, there's not an item he doesn't wear.
Yeah, because he wears a sleeve on one arm. He wears I think he wears a wrist thing and an elbow thing on the other one.
And he wears tape on both his wrists.
Yep. And I think he has finger tape on at least one finger.
I think he wears one of the compression things as well on his leg. Yeah, he's got it all. Next game, he's going to come out with a pocketbook.
He's like the 2K My Player when you're just like, well, I have access to all these things. I might as well just put them on.
That is exactly. And like he's absolutely a 2K My Player. That is very true. He wears everything.
So, okay, I want to ask you this. I think this is a good way to end it, and I think your fans will be interested in this. Okay, so the Thunder, and this is largely true of the Warriors, but their storylines are a little bit different. This game is out of the way now. It looks pretty definite that the Thunder will make the playoffs. What the seeding is variable. What are you looking forward to for the rest of the regular season?
From the Thunder specifically?
Yes.
You know, I have a relatively cliche and generic answer, but like,
we're all about emotional honesty on this podcast. We've already talked about this.
I honestly, the number one thing that I want to see is the number one thing that anybody else wants to see, which is I want to see if Russell Westbrook's going to average a triple double. Cause I think that would be, you know, you can talk about stat padding on rebounds and all that kind of stuff, but like, it's an unbelievable accomplishment if he is able to do it. And even if, you know, he's got a lot of uncontested rebounds, a lot of free throw rebounds and whatever it is, but like, you know, no one's been able to stat pad themselves to a triple-double average since Oscar Robertson. And I just think that would be an unbelievable accomplishment if he's able to finish the year averaging a triple-double. And I would just want to see how many he ends up with. Like, he's got 26 now. Is he going to get 40? Like, I want to see how many he ends up with because he's already at an incomprehensible number. And
the difference in pace is also incredible here because this is not a circumstance where, like quarterbacks in football, where the circumstances are more favorable to him than his predecessors. I would argue, I mean, with outside of the current change in the hand check rules, that it's harder to do now than it was then because of how much slower the game is. And my answer for the Thunder would be actually pretty similar, which is I can't care as much about whether he actually wins it or not because that is outside of anyone's hands. But can a player who finishes, let's say they get the 6th or 7th seed, be deserving of the MVP whether he wins it or not? I believe right now that he is. He would be my MVP if they gave me a vote, which they do not. And will that continue for the whole season? Because that would be incredible.
I think that's a great one. Yeah, he'd be the lowest MVP, the lowest seeded MVP since, I don't know, was it Moses Malone? What were the Rockets in 82 when Moses Malone won? They had 40 some odd wins, but I don't think they were a 6 or 7 seed. I think they were higher than that.
I think they were like a 4 or 5, but I don't remember for sure.
Yeah, I think that's right. So, yeah, I mean, he'd be the lowest one since I actually don't know. I should know the answer to that, but I actually don't.
Since your best friend, Yankee Alex Rodriguez.
Yeah, Alex Rodriguez won a last place team. There you go. Mike Trout. Did it on a bad team.
Yeah.
Larry Walker did it on a bad team.
But there is a big difference in baseball. And this is part of the reason why I love the basketball MVP is it's whole league. You don't have that sample issue. You don't have it where it's a weak year or a strong year, like how guys make the all-star team sometimes and you go, oh, well, that's not fair because their conference is bad. NBA, it's whole league. You have to earn it. There's no way, even if it's a weak year, it's still an incredible performance.
Right. Baseball, there's also not as much of a emphasis on quality of team in the voting. And there shouldn't be, because one player can't have the impact on his team that he can
because
in basketball.
Because it's basically an individual sport and a team concept.
Right.
Which I used to love and now don't enjoy as much.
I still love baseball.
Anything else? I'm not going to say we covered this game thoroughly, but we definitely covered the overall experience pretty well.
Yeah.
Here's one. Did you have a favorite sign or a favorite shirt or anything that you saw?
I will say the coward shirts that started with a K were terrible. That's just not a good pun. That's just not – I did not think that was a good pun. As the self-appointed pun master general of Thunder Twitter, not impressed with Coward with a K.
Until Dan Wojcicki decides he wants to cover the Thunder?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But I still got it on Wojcicki right now. I'm trying to think if I had a fear. I mean, there was a girl who was actually wearing a cupcake costume. Did you see this?
I did.
That was pretty – I don't know if her parents are the greatest parents of all time and she'll get an award, or if that kid needs to go into child services, but there is nowhere in between.
Yeah, I can't think of, I fully agree with you that there is another one. Yeah, I was surprised, but also TV, they don't necessarily do a great job of showing the signs. That's why I was wondering in person, because sometimes those can come through and not make the air.
Yeah, there was one with a grammar error that I really thought was funny, which was, what was it? Now I got to find it because I tweeted it out and the grammar error. Now I'm finding it on my it was a Russia joke. Did you see this one?
Oh, I trust Russians more than Durant or something like that.
Yeah, it was I trust Russia more than KD, which they're obviously saying I trust Russia more than KD. Wait, OK, now I'm confused myself. They are now saying that they trust Russia more than Kevin Durant trusts Russia, which is a really funny misphrasing. I really enjoyed that, but more ironically.
What? So is your expectation that it'll be just that basically the game in March will be this turn from 11 to like 9 or 8?
Yeah,
or
yeah, no, there's no way it's going to be the same. There's no way.
Well, and when you bought tickets to that game, those fans knew what they were expecting and what was going to be a part of the experience in the first time. And so that has to tone down.
It shouldn't be the same. Like, this is supposed to be a unique moment with an incredible environment and an amazing crowd and a one-time thing. And if it's like this every time, doesn't that kind of – if it's the same way next time, doesn't that make this time go down from like a 10 to a 9.5?
Sure.
Like that – if it's the same way next time, that kind of demeans this time in some way.
I would agree.
Yeah. So that's about all I've got. That's what Steven Adams does at the end of interviews when he like finishes an answer and he just keeps going and no one has a question. He goes, that's it. That's all.
I like it.
The Adams.
I like it. Well, it's always a pleasure. Well, I'm sure we'll talk in March when you and I will talk in between as well.
I'm sure we will talk in between.
Thanks again to Fred Katz for taking the time to come on. You can listen to him on Locked on Thunder and you can read him at the Norman Transcripts and follow him on Twitter at Fred Katz, FREDKATZ. Was a fascinating experience for me, and I wrote about this a little bit for The Athletic because it was so much more about the human drama and the spectacle than the game itself, considering they had already played two lopsided games before, so that wasn't really where the drama lied, and I have no problem with that. The NBA season is really long, and it helps break things up, make things interesting, especially considering this, absent this, probably would have been a letdown game for the Warriors after Memphis, considering Memphis had beaten them twice in a row, only team to beat them twice. The Warriors got a nice win. Now they go to Denver to face the Nuggets, and it was intriguing. I really do enjoy that as much as I'd like to be kind of the cold-hearted analyst at moments in my life. I can certainly appreciate the personal drama that was involved in this game, not only for the players, but also for the fans, and it certainly is important. So you can piece that together from this game and was a part of the experience, and now we move forward into other things, and the Warriors got a little bit of help with the Spurs losing again. It looks more and more like, barring the unforeseen, they will have a comfortable margin for the best record in the West and home court advantage throughout the playoffs. So not the biggest deal in the world considering we're already at the All-Star or we're not even at the All-Star break, but still interesting. If you want to support the show, you can do that in a lot of different ways. You can leave a rating, leave a review. You can subscribe, download every episode, especially when we put out special weekend episodes like I did after the Grizzlies game. It's always a great way to do that through subscribing. And also you can support the show by checking out SeatGeek, a great way to buy and sell tickets, something I use personally. And if you download the free app, use the promo code LOWARRIORS for Locked On Warriors. You get $20 off your first purchase. So you buy something, and they just send you $20 back. It's a great way to use an app that I already do use to buy and sell tickets. And again, the promo code is LOWARRIORS from SeatGeek. I will be back tomorrow with an episode on the Warriors-Nuggets game. Probably going to have a guest working through all that at the moment. And going to have some other stuff throughout the week. But as I've mentioned before, I'm not exactly sure what the timing is going to be for the podcast once the game stop. I'm going to be in New Orleans for All-Star, and then I'm going to be off for a week. But I will, you know, so there won't be anything produced during that time, but it'll probably be pretty quiet, and then I'll do a catch-up episode, presumably on Sunday night, maybe Monday morning, depending on how late I get in, and then be back on the normal train going with everything else. So this week will be probably pretty normal, except at the game stop. You know, Wednesday's game with the Kings, I will certainly do a podcast on, and then I'll figure it out from there depending on what kind of content gets generated from All-Star. So thank you so much for listening. Take care and make it a great day.
Ace is the place with the helpful hardware, folks.
It's Ace's biggest LED light bulb sale of the year. Right now, buy one, get one free on our best-selling LED light bulbs. Our four-pack of LED bulbs is $9.99, and our two-pack of LED floodlights is only $12.99. Buy one, get one free. There's no limit on how much you can save, so stock up now. Hurry in. Buy one, get one free on long-lasting 10-year LED bulbs, now through Monday, only at your neighborhood Ace. See participating stores for details.